Part 10, chapter 31, doubts the camp. With the better weather, our fictional Everest team returned to Camp 2 for their rotation to overnight at Camp 3 and to get their ticket to the top punched. But some of the members were starting to have doubts. Okay, listen up. Up at 2, boots on the ground at 2:30 for Camp 2. Get breakfast and be ready to go to C2 no later than arriving at C2 no later than 10 a.m. This is our last rotation before the summit push, so you need to meet your times and style and perform well to get a chance for the summit. This includes getting to C3. Jean-Paul was firm in his instructions. Jim leaned over to Michael, who was looking at his boots with a 1,000-yard stare. Really? I don't need that tough love talk before going to bed. Michael just glanced up and nodded. But they knew he was speaking the truth. Jim had struggled to get to C2 last time, and he was now full of doubts if he could even make it to C3 in the allotted time. Last year when he turned back at C3, then he was with a different guide who didn't have a cutoff time, but they also had a very low summit rate. But they were also more relaxed than the Mount Everest guides. Now Jim was questioning if he made the right decision of who to go with this year. Just do your best, Michael told him as they walked back to their tent. 2 a.m. came early. It was dark at Crampon Point. Their headlamps lit up the boots as they strapped on their crampons. Following Mima, Harper tried hard to keep up. After only 10 minutes, she was already out of breath at 17,800 feet. Oh my God, Harper said loud, bending over, placing her hands on her knees. This was her third time in the icefall and it wasn't feeling any easier. Mingma paused. He looked at her. Quietly, impatiently, with no judgment in his voice, he said, "Everything okay, Dee Dee?" Harper looked up from her stooped over body and muttered, "Yeah." She felt defeated in the dark, icy walls low in the Khumbu icefall. It was a clear night with the full moon. The Sherpa said this would have been a great night to summit. Actually, someone did summit, the rope-fixing team. A group of six Sherpas got to fix lines to the summit a day ahead of schedule. Fixing the lines above 26,000 feet is dangerous, difficult work. The Sherpas carry large spools of nylon rope plus aluminum pickets, steel pitons, and carabiners to attach the rope to the mountain. It's hard work, but one the Sherpas took great pride in performing. With each step higher, Harper started to feel stronger. Throughout had become familiar. She and the couple reached the ladders at the top of the fall. Harper and Claudia scaled them with ease. At the top, Harper paused to catch her breath again. Something inside of her clicked and made her smile. Mima looked at her again with the eye of a caring mother or a stern father. She couldn't tell the difference, but felt better knowing that he was watching her closely. The team stopped at Camp 1, where a large tent was pitched to store gear. Inside, the Sherpas melted some snow for water. The members ate their snacks they brought from base camp and rested for the next leg to Camp 2. The entire team was there, plus their personal climbing Sherpas and John Paul. "Nice job. It may have felt tough, but you cut 2 hours off from the first trip to C2, John Paul told the team. Michael smiled at Jim. Aaron patted Bart on the back. "It's going to be a hot one today. No wind, no clouds. Let's start with our jackets, but we'll be ready to strip down to a single top layer when the sun crests Lhotse," John Paul advised his team. The trek up the lower Khumbu was a bit easier this time. This was familiar territory, but Camp 2 was still a mirage. They could see dark spots to their left that marked the rocks where Camp 2 was situated, but it seemed to never get closer. They walked in a single file line, all clipped into the fixed rope. No one spoke. Everyone was lost in concentration. Everyone was in their own world. "Can I do this? I should be feeling stronger. What if I'm too slow? Maybe I start using oxygen, leaving Camp 2. I can't be the last one in Camp 3. Pablo's internal voices were battling. He shared his fears with Claudia the previous night. "I'm afraid," he said, comparing his feelings to what he experienced on Denali when he returned back at 17,000-foot high camp. "Yes, but you learned from that and you summited Aconcagua. And that was higher than Denali's high camp." Harper told him, holding his hand tight and looking directly in the eye. The sun was now directly above. No clouds to block it today. He felt like a bacon frying in a pan. Taking off layer after layer was not helping. There was no solution other than just to push through. The last tiny hill to the gully leading to Camp 2, it felt like a summit. The last 100 meters to Camp 2 hurt. He was tired. He needed water. But most of all, he wanted to lie down. Entering the bottom of the rocky ravine, he sat on a rock. Claudia sat next to him. Harper gave him the last of her water. "It's not too far now," she said, reassuring him. As they walked higher, the familiarity gave them all strength. All of a sudden, he started walking faster. He glanced up at the Lhotse face, citing the tiny yellow tents that marked Camp 3. That would be their destination soon. That night at Camp 2, everyone reflected on the day. Dutch and Tony were sharing a tent. "How long do we have to reach Camp 3?" Dutch asked. "Not sure, but probably between 6 to 7 hours max." Listening in the tent next over, Jim called out, "It took me 10 hours last year." Crawling into their sleeping bags, the internal debate continued. Pablo tossed all night long. Claudia took forever to fall asleep worrying about her mate. The team felt fragmented. John Paul, laying on his back, his eyes wide open, stared at the yellow tent ceiling as the sun set over Pomori, concerned about his team. Chapter 32, Climbing the Lhotse Face. The Mount Everest guides team sat around the small dining table at Camp 2. They knew what was coming. John Paul was making the announcement about the climb to Camp 3. "I hope like hell he's in a good mood," Jim muttered. Dutch and Tony had decided they needed between 6 and 8 hours to arrive in what John Paul called style. Bart, Pablo, Jim thought they would need more time than that, and they were concerned. Bart was still recovering from his upper respiratory infection. Pablo had a serious confidence issue, and Jim, well, last year he took 10 hours to get up there, and he was the last to see two on this rotation. He was worried that John Paul was out to get him. "Good dinner, everyone," John Paul made his entrance. He and Dalla had spent the last hour strategizing how to get all of their members to the top. Harper smiled. "Delicious. Seriously, I like spam." Everyone else just groaned. "Okay, here's the plan. We leave at 3 a.m. tomorrow morning. The weather looks good, but the wind can come out of nowhere on the face, so be prepared with all the layers that you brought. Goggles, too. The trick on this climb is to find a pace that you can sustain all day. Don't start off too fast, but also don't get in a rut. Climb smart, be efficient at breaks. It'll be crowded, but there'll be two ropes, one for guys going up and the other for people coming down. Do not climb on the wrong rope, or the Sherpas will let you know about it." By now, he had everybody's attention. "We'll divide into three sub-teams. Group one, that'll be Harper, Claudia, and Tony. Mingma will be with that group. Next are Aaron, Dutch, and Michael. Dabo will take care of you. And I'll be on the third group of Pablo, Jim, and Bart. We'll have extra Sherpas who can bring you back down if there's a problem." John Paul has split their groups by style and by speed. Both the buddies and the couple began to ask about being split up. "I don't like this at all. Let's all go together and let it evolve naturally," Aaron began. "I agree," Claudia chimed in. "I understand your concern about splitting up, but this is the best way for each of you to get the support that you need. I believe everyone can make it, and I've set a time limit of 9 hours. That's plenty of time to get there. So there's not so much about speed, but it's about acclimatization. It will do no one any good at all to arrive to Camp 3 exhausted. But we'll have a couple of bottles of O's up there if someone really needs it." Taking it all in, everyone felt it was a good plan and appreciated the positive spin from John Paul. They appreciated the extra support and also the availability of oxygen if it was needed. "Well, speaking only for myself, I like it," Jim said, looking at John Paul and Dalla. Sitting in her tent at Camp 2, 21,500 feet, Harper rubbed the sleep out of her eyes. Her headlamp betrayed her cold breath at 3 a.m. Today, she climbed the Lhotse face. She was both excited and anxious, understanding the objective and the pressure to perform well. She noted that John Paul had put her in the first team, a vote of confidence in her strength. The morning routine was annoyingly familiar. It took 10 times longer when Harper was back home to put on her boots. But breakfast was simple: toast, egg, hot cereal, and coffee. The Sherpa cooks had been up since 1 a.m. heating water, so Harper ate her breakfast with gratitude. Sitting silently in the tent, Dutch cursed the tiny golf chairs for their instability, but then considered where he was, and he was happy to be sitting on anything. Taking one last sip of coffee, he turned on his headlamp. Stepping out of the tent, Pablo kneeled down to put his crampons, but then he looked up. The moon was lighting up the face. It looked huge. Squinting, he looked for Camp 3. Maybe he saw it. Yeah, probably not. Finishing his crampon work, he took another deep breath. Claudia was doing the same procedure next to him and turned her head. Her headlamp was now lighting up his face. "You'll do fine. Slow and easy. Remember to breathe. Use all the techniques we know, pressure breathing, rest steps, all the footwork steps, French, side step, you know them." The walk to the base of the Lhotse face was familiar. They did it on their first rotation, but that was for exercise. And also it was in daylight. And now they were in the dark, and it seemed to go on forever. Michael didn't remember the elevation gain and found himself breathing hard, going too fast. Approaching the base, he glanced at his watch. It took over an hour, a bit quicker than last time. He looked up, and all he could see was snow and ice. Bending over, he clipped his carabiner and Jumar onto the white nylon rope. That's his lifeline. With his ice axe in the other hand, he began. The first section seemed steep, but Harper had read all about the Lhotse face, so this was not a surprise. It was steep, seriously steep, and not quite what Harper was expecting. Okay, it should ease shortly. She tried to convince herself, at least that's how it looked from camp too. Now 2 hours in, her mind began to wander. She heard the voices of those back home. They found out that she was going to Everest, the negative voices. Why is Harper crazy? Glory? She's a rich, spoiled brat, peak bagger, selfish. The naysayers were loud, especially at work. No one said anything to her face, but Harper heard them and knew what people said about those people who go climb Everest. She fought too hard to keep the voices from growing into doubts, but she knew why she was there and who believed in her. But critically, she believed it herself. Glancing up from his feet, Jim could see the lower part of the Lhotse face up close. The ice was hard. It was a translucent blue. He stared at the crampon front point. Damn, I wish they were sharper, he mumbled out loud. The wind picked up, blowing a bit on the snow on his face. Actually, he didn't mind. It took his mind off the pain he was starting to feel in his calves. Looking around, Aaron saw a few of his teammates. He felt good that Bart was just behind him. Even though they had split into teams, they were moving as one large group for now. The Sherpas seemed like they were everywhere. Tony was on the up rope. There was another up to rope to his left, the down rope. They seemed to go on forever, disappearing into the white snowscape above him. He was careful not to put his weight on the rope. That was not the purpose. They were there to stop a fall, not to get him up the hill. Climb with your legs, Tony heard John Paul in his head. Namaste, he heard a Sherpa behind him. Actually, there were five, all with heavy packs, oxygen bottles strapped to both sides. He stepped to his right, and then he let him go by. He was amazed and admired their speed and their strength. These moments felt like a high-altitude ballet. They are attached to the fixed rope by two thin strips of nylon webbing that were attached to a carabiner and a Jumar. The Jumar has small teeth going in one direction that will catch a fall in the opposite direction. The golden rule was to always stay clipped in to the fixed rope. Wanting to pass another climber, Harper makes eye contact with him. No words were spoken. Only a nod was exchanged. She unclipped her beaner while keeping the Jumar attached. She reached around him to clip the beaner back onto the rope ahead of him. He stood still, not wanting to make any movement that might throw her off balance, both of them off balance. She took a few small steps around him and reached back to unclip the Jumar. Now successfully passed, she reattached the Jumar and continued climbing higher. Once again focused on her own climb, Harper saw the boot path ahead. Steps kicked into the hard ice. She was grateful for the traffic and the Lhotse face that created small buckets in the ice where she could plant her feet. Somehow the steps provided a placebo that would be easy to reach Camp 3 at 23,600 feet. The steps were few and far between, loose and soft, unreliable today. Maybe they'd be different on the summit push with more traffic over the next few weeks. More steps, more clips. The fixed rope was attached to earth every few hundred feet. Each anchor required a series of actions. Harper was glad that she had spent extra money on having good gloves. Her down jacket had felt good, but now with the sun rising over the summit of Lhotse, she began to think about the layers as she took a drink of water and a gulp of honey stinger chews. The three groups had spread the team out. As expected, the last group was struggling. John Paul called out, "We're doing well. Let's keep this pace up. Only a few more hours." Chubb looked at Bart and winked. He forced a small grin back. Suddenly, she saw the tents ahead that appeared to come out of nowhere. The climb thus far had been a series of steep sections followed by a short flat spot. It was a cruel trick, but the tents were a welcome sight. However, there were three Camp Threes. Another cruel trick. The face was too steep to put the tents for all the teams just in one spot. And of course, Mount Everest Guides Camp was the highest one. The irony this time was both good news and bad news. During this rotation, everyone would curse the extra climbing time. But on the summit push, they would have an advantage of making the distance to the South Col just a bit shorter. Also, tonight, they would sleep higher than anyone else. Another mixed bag. Passing by the tents, Harper saw her fellow climbers in tents. Smiling at them, they took her picture, but also she was envious that they were resting already. Their climb was over for the day. Jealously fueled her steps higher, Harper stayed focused on her form. Step, plant the ice axe. Step, move the beaner. Step, move the jumar. Stand up straight. Look ahead. Smile for the camera. Passing the last of the tents, a high bump of ice came into focus. If she were home, where she trained, Harper would pass this in a matter of minutes, maybe seconds. But at 23,600 feet, she stopped and just stared at the obstacle. She was breathing heavily now. Finally, she mustered whatever was left in her fuel tank and took a few more steps. Higher, slower, the climb was taking a toll on her body. She glanced over her shoulder at Claudia and Tony, who were close behind. Almost there? Harper asked Mingma, bringing up the rear. Yes, Dee Dee. Vasari, Vasari, slowly, slowly. Moving on, Harper no longer looked anywhere but her feet, uninterrupted until an next anchor came into view. Her style was zombie-esque. A familiar voice called out. It was a Sherpa from her team. He waved at her with enthusiasm to come towards the yellow tent. Harper stepped carefully through the maze of lines that secured the tents to the mountainside. Slowly, she moved towards them, having no real choice but to move slowly. Harper was knackered. Finally reaching her tent, she collapsed in a down-covered heap. Careful with a crampon, she finally looked up to see where she was. Her breathing continued to be heavy. Now Harper had the 100-yard stare. A bit of water helped begin her recovery. Slowly, she began to come around. Her mind thought like she was texting on her phone with a simple, oh my God. It was justified. The scene defied her words. Oh my God. Slowly, her eyes traced a perimeter. Noopsy to her left, the Western Coon front and center, Everest to the right. Was she really there? She scanned the view again. Now Harper saw Pumori. It looked tiny compared to how it dominates the view of base camp, but she was more than a mile higher, looking down the summits of mere 20,000 foot peaks. On the horizon, she spotted Choyoyu, the world's sixth highest peak. She recognized a flat summit plateau. Maybe that'll be next, Harper said to Tony. He seemed lost in the moment and didn't respond as usual. They were pleased how quickly they recovered after more food and water. Harper's breathing had finally slowed and her heart rate was steady. She was back in control. Sitting on the snow-covered Lhotse face that sank into Harper, she was climbing Everest. Well, Lhotse technically. She glanced over her right shoulder and saw the massive shoulder of the world's highest mountain. Taking in a deep breath, she let it out slowly. She leaned back on her pack. The rest of the team was getting closer. Harper glanced at the time on her watch. 6 hours, 57 minutes. She smiled.